Patty there.
Let me stop it. Is Candy coming up?
Yeah, you meant Candy.
Yeah, I'm no, okay. And Jay Jordan.
Jay?
What's up, man? We're talking about Criminal Island, just getting into some of the gangs that existed.
Why did you start without me?
What?
The most important part.
Oh, yeah, we can go back over a little bit of that.
The groups that went to San Pedro High School, for example, you know, are they're very clannish. They stayed together quite a bit at school. You know, it wasn't all that open, I don't think.
Let me stop it. Is Candy coming up?
Yeah, you meant Candy.
Yeah, I'm
no, okay. And Jay Jordan.
Jay?
What's up, man? We're talking about Criminal Island, just getting into some of the gangs that existed.
Why did you start without me?
What?
I guess the most important part.
Oh, yeah, we can go back over a little bit of that.
The groups that went to San Pedro High School, for example, you know, are they're very clannish. They stayed together quite a bit at school. You know, it wasn't all that open, I don't think, with other society. They stuck together. They were very clannish. You know, they would eat together, and when them brothers pulled out them chopsticks, nobody laughed, you know. Really, because, you know, there were enough of them to quench anything that even smacked of racism, you know. They were really pretty strong that way. Pretty take care of themselves type of thing. There were not too many of the Terminal Island people that related to, for example, sports in high school. It was any Asians that got into sports were usually from San Pedro.
Oh.
And San Pedro area had, in those days, Palos Verdes was a farm, you know, one huge farm, collective type farm where Asians were like sharecroppers, you know, they would rent area and do what they call dry farming, you know. I guess Mary Cochiamo filled you in on that, on the San Pedro.
A little.
Yeah. And they worked in sports, you know. They did the sports thing in the schools, and the Terminal Island people were just, you know, we had our own competitions more or less, so that they were. Oh, Dave Nakagawa was one of the big. He's a Terminal Islander, but he used to play on the varsity team and things like that. You know, he's one of the celebrities, the young day celebrities. You know,
I have this image though. Somebody once told me about the San Pedro High. Were the Japanese from, and I thought it was from Terminal Island, but maybe it was just was San Pedro. They would call the signals in Japanese. They're playing football against the other high school team, so you wouldn't have to huddle.
I recall something like that, but I don't recall it really happening. But the C, like the C football team, you know, was like all Asians, you know, and there used to be a lot of crazy things happen, like. You'd have, you know, groups of Issei's come and watch a game, for example, you know, and they'd yell out to the kids in Japanese. Everybody go, hey, what's going on? But I do recall that, you know, the old man out there telling, well, kick your ass if you don't do good out there. Some sweet
coaching
thing like
from
that.
From
the side lines, yeah.
What was it like for the women, you know, as far as you could see for the young girls growing up?
Gosh, there was a lot of cultural things for them. I know they had a Japanese dance. A lot of Japanese. My mother used to teach Japanese dancing, and traditional dancing, and tea ceremonies and all that junk. And you know, I was telling you about this auditorium that they had. They would have these things. They would, you know, the girls would learn that all this tradition, and then they would do the people, you know.
Would all of them go through that now? Was it like the judo or?
No. I don't think a lot of the young lady, the women used to work when they, you know, the big thing was that, you know, the big shame was if you couldn't allow your daughter to finish high school and she had to start working in the canneries before she got her education, you know. And that was the big shame. You know. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about that family? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They pulled their daughter out of school.
Yeah. Did this happen
a lot? Economic,
Did this happen a lot or just?
I think not too often because it was newsworthy when it happened, you know. That would indicate that it wasn't.
Family was in pretty bad streets then. Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
It also is a based art image of what turmoil is in life from the master's thesis written by
Kawasaki.
Kawasaki.
Oh, yeah.
And,
1930.
Yeah.
And in there he talks about the family relationship and how, you know, a lot of the picture brides were disappointed with their maids and their, you know, threatening divorce or actually divorced them. Was there a very hard sense of divorce?
I never heard of divorce. Never. Of course, you know, I was quite young. I really don't think I'm the one to give you an answer on that. You know. But I am familiar with picture brides. My mother-in-law was a picture bride. She always tells us about.
What was her first reaction to as dates and her husband?
God, I'd like to find that out myself, you know. But I could never get her to discuss it, you know. They had five kids, so.
They got together a few times. You said, I don't know, did you want to pursue this a little bit more?
Well, just about the arranged marriages. Was there a network of, I mean, a set system of how, you know, arranged marriages were conducted? Or was there certain people that were known as...
the go-betweens. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, tell us about, you said they were professional go-betweens.
Oh, sure. They even had them in camp, you know. If you wanted to get married, you'd approach this go-between and give him I forgot how much money, but I think in camp it was $100 or something like that, you know. And then he would investigate both families. Finally, it was his responsibility to make sure that there was no TB and, you know, the different diseases, and then there was no mental problems in the families and things like that. And he'd give you a checklist to come off, you know. Well, she must be all right because, you know, family's good, you know. And, the one thing about Terminal Island, they had a caste system that was exactly like Japan, you know. Are you people familiar with the caste system? They had this low caste system called Eta. And these were people from Japan that made shoes and... did the cleanup work and this type of thing, and they were in a different category in terms of caste, and this followed them, you know, and they would move into Terminal Island, you know, and there would be the usual rumblings about it. You know.
Oh, you had a specific, were they segregated in the living area?
No.
But you knew who was
there. Right. Yeah. That followed them. As a matter of fact, during the Terminal Island reunion, I heard one of the girls talking about it. She said, gee, he made an Eta girl or something like that.
Yeah.
Talking. Still there. I mean, you know, that was 6 months ago. And they're still hassling with that. So.
It was a very strong thing.
Really? Yeah. And the go-betweens would develop, you know, their own skills as to how to get the two people together. Some of them were very blunt, you know, and some of them were really pretty classy in the way that they did it.
How many people like this were there? Were they usually men or women?
The ones that I know, one was a woman, one was a man, so I guess, yeah.
Either way. Were they just a couple people?
there must have been more, because, you know, I was exposed to a few of them that would come and talk to us, you know. There was a tremendous amount of gambling in Terminal Island.
Oh.
Yeah, they had little gambling halls there that people would go and lose their wages, and fishing boats change hands.
Oh.
Yeah, really some real...
Heavy gambling.
Really heavy, heavy gambling, yeah.
What kind of form did it take? What did they? Cards?
Cards, Japanese.
Hana?
Yeah, and.
I don't know.
I used to go there and watch them, and I just.
I mean, you still, I guess.
Yeah, cards.
Hi. Hi.
I guess Mahjong too. But, you know, they had the cages, they had chuck-a-luck and the whole thing, because I used to remember. You know, going in there and watching it, you know.
Well, they let kids in?
They didn't care.
Yeah.
You know.
It was pretty open then.
Yeah.
It wasn't condemned by the community and just kind of tolerated. It was just a very open.
As a matter of fact, the one that ran the place was a very high figure in the society. You know. He had a lot to say about the politics of the island.
Like Gardena, huh?
In a lot of ways. But it, you know, it was kind of down home type gambling. It didn't have the facilities, yeah, like we have in Gardena. Yeah.
It tended to keep poor people poor then.
Oh, that perspective, yeah, in terms of the gambling. Yeah. After all, people with gold, right? I don't really know. Being a son of a school teacher put me in a different bag, I think, in a lot of ways. I learned to fight a lot, you know, because being a Japanese school teacher's son.
They hated his son.
Yeah.
They hated her.
They hated her, so they hated me. Yeah. You know? Yeah, the one way they got back.
Yeah.
So, however, during the times, you know, when something would happen to me, the Japanese community would come to my, you know, like when San Pedro, after the war, you know, it was very, very tense, naturally, you know, and so we used to all go in groups, and if you get caught by yourself, you know, from a group of people, then... They used to call it standing around, you know. In other words, you support a guy by being there. And so if you're having a problem with, for example, you know, with some white guy, before you know it, there'd be four or five Asians or Japanese standing there, just looking around, you know. They look like spectators, but if anything happened, like, they'd jump right in, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was all that ideal, you know. I mean, talking to a lot of old ex-Terminal Island people, you know, picnics and reunions, you know, they have more picnics and reunions than anybody I ever heard of. You know, there must be some indication that they had something. The thing that that interests me a lot is they all feel proud of the fact that they came from Terminal Island. I think rightfully so. They really had a close-knit community compared to, you know, some other community that's been fostered within the confines of white society. You know. That's really about the only difference I can see, I think. But that's a difference I think that should make it interesting for you, that if you know, are in a closed system, there's a lot of problems with closed systems, and this, in reality, was a closed system. And the problems are there was not a development that paralleled the American dream, you know, in a lot of ways. But the thing that is interesting is that they also didn't have the racism or the bigotry that other Asian communities felt.
Somebody once said that in that way it kind of approximated those of us who grew up in Hawaii.
Right, right.
Yeah. wasn't so, you didn't have to look over your shoulder all the time.
Right, yes. So, since my mother and father came from Hawaii, they thought that Terminal Island was the closest thing to Hawaii.
Oh, did they talk about it like that?
Yes,
oh,
they did.
How did you close the community? It seems like it'd be harder for the families to explain to people. You know, I mean, if they were overly rough on the people that they could unify, you know, and try to do something about it. Were there any union type of movements to try to organize the people?
Gee, you know, the thing that, when I think about those kind of things, it was whatever there was, and that was overshadowed by the longshoremen and the lumber companies that were on Terminal Island at that time. And they used to fight with the...
That's right, longshoremen. Huh?
Yeah, the longshoremen were... They struck all the time. But as far as the Asian community is concerned, you're going to have to ask somebody else. I can't give you a good answer on that. Maybe Dave might know more about that.
What effect did it all, because the labor struggles then were really fierce, right? The union things, especially ILWU.
Yeah, don't forget now, you know, when you think about the time, 1930s, early 1930s was the point of depression for the country at that time, you know. And survival, I think, was one of the biggest situations, you know.
Yeah, we never did make that connection, or at least I didn't. So explicitly about living in a community like that during the Depression. You know, did the Depression have a direct effect on it? And so, you know, what? It sounds like it didn't have that.
No, surprisingly, I think Terminal Island weathered the Depression storm quite well. You know, as far as the people are concerned, you know, when you get down to that kind of economic struggle, the basics are, you know, the whole problem, and nobody starved, you know. You got mighty sick and tired of fish. But nobody starved, yeah. And I know that there used to be exchanges with the farmers.
Barter, huh?
Yeah. With barter change. As some of the larger markets on Terminal Island used to have trucks that loaded up with fish, and they go down there and exchange it for
vegetables
at the market, and they come back down and distribute the vegetables, you know.
So nobody ever went without eating, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yes. Did people talk about battles on the waterfront? Do you remember?
I can't recall any. Oh, you mean other than the Asian community?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. The labor battles. As a matter of fact, Camille Baxter's father, stepfather, George Conant, was a scab. One of the hated people in the community, because he would go and, he was a real big dude, you know, and really strong, and he would go out and scab for the lumber companies. And I remember people telling me, "Yeah, you live next door to a scab," you know.
Well, yeah. They had that kind of feeling about
it. Oh yeah, it was
worker
very,
solidarity.
There was gun battles, you know, that type of thing. You wake up in the middle of the night and hear guns firing and stuff like
on
that.
On Terminal Island?
Yeah.
Who was shooting at whom?
I think they were shooting at the people trying to get into the lumber yards, you know, to or the longshoremen, you know. The longshoremen history in Terminal Island and San Pedro is long and bloody. Well, I think to put it into, you know, right across the bay, you know, it's a bay that you could swim, and that's one of the big tests, you know, if you're going to be part of the people on Terminal Island, you had to swim across and back on the channel, which to me, you know, when I was a kid, it looked like forever, but right now, you know, it's just not too far. But on the other side of the bay was what we call Beacon Street, and Beacon Street averaged one murder a day. That's the type of society that was, right across the bay, you know.
Yeah.
And they had
those were sailors and drifters,
yeah,
and
right, and longshoremen, and fantastic in its intensities of that kind of activity. And even after I came back to Terminal Island, after came back to San Pedro, these things are still operating. So they operated during World War II at the peak. It's all torn down now for urban renewal, you know. But I think it was Steinbeck or somebody wrote about Shanghai Reds, and that was on the corner of Second and Beacon Street and San Pedro.
When the Japanese were evacuated off Terminal Island, who worked in the canneries?
Filipinos and Chicanos and whoever they could get in there. During the Depression, we had a whole lot of people from the Dust Bowl come there. Arkansas, all the
Okies.
Yeah, Oklahomans. And, all white people would come in their junky old trucks, and they became part of the society there. I mean, you know, they just moved into every nook and cranny. They tar paper shacks leaped up all over the place out there in the open areas, and because there they could find food. You know,
you just
go down to canneries and wait till the fish fell out of the crates, you know, or out of the boxes, and they'll pick them up and. So they became part of that society. During the Depression, there was an influx of white Okies and Arkies and what have you, you know. And they were accepted. I don't really recall anything that, in terms of a fight between them. Because I think the Asian was still a power on the island until after the war.
How about with the smaller Chicano or Filipino population? Were these people mostly working in the canneries then?
Right. They had businesses and worked in the canneries and fishing also. Yeah. I don't really recall any problems in terms of racial problems.
Not that much relationship, actually.
No. We used to have competitive sports events from Terminal Island against Fish Harbor, you know. And play tackle football with 100 kids on each side, that type of thing.
Nobody ever scores, but right.
Yeah. Pretty soon they're just saying hike and banging against each other. The football's way over there.
Like Hawaii, I remember stuff like that.
It was, as a matter of fact, there was a lot of people from Hawaii there. Yeah, they can relate to that, to Terminal Island. It's another island, you know, I guess.
What about this nationalism thing? Can you go into that a little bit? Relationship? We know that the illegal aliens and stuff, I mean, quite a direct tie with Japan, ocean liners coming in all the time. let me preface that by saying, you know, at least from my, just the kinds of things I'm learning in American history, now, one of the directions that the Nisei took after the Second World War was to downplay any of this stuff, to try to prove that the Japanese Americans, including Issei, for some strange reason, that everybody was a full-blooded 100% red American, white American. And that in that process, a whole lot of the history has been totally clouded over. So we just don't know. And that it makes sense if a lot of the Japanese were quite nationalistic in terms of their orientation towards Japan. And it maybe we're just getting to the point now where we can look at that and try to understand it rather than condemn it or try to shy away from it, you know.
I don't really recall after World War II that there was that many differences. I know that when they took all, you know, like the judo instructor and Japanese school teacher, they all got busted, you know, and taken away. My mother didn't go because she had worked for the immigration department, you know, so they didn't take her. But I think effectively what they did was try to break the leadership on the island there. And I don't recall any violence because of it, you know, and it's, I've never heard of anybody tell me about any violence either. As for what happened to nationalism, Japanese nationalism, I can't give you a good evaluation on that either. Mm. Wouldn't be accurate. No, you know.
Well, like, not like even, I don't even when you went to judo classes. And
oh, that's right. We didn't have any more judo or kendo school after the war.
No, I'm talking about when you were growing up on Turmel Island, the nationalism on Turmel Island before the war.
I think it was just a duplicate of what they had in Japan.
So it was pretty Japanese.
Right, answer, really, right? Really, yeah. Japanese, yeah. You know, we spoke Japanese, and Japanese school was more important than American school.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you could miss American school, but you can't miss Japanese school.
Oh.
And there was a lot of discipline. I remember, like, the Japanese schools, we used to laugh at the other kids in Japanese school. They had to march around. They had this Japanese marching thing, you know, where they would kind of go step around, you know. We used to all hang around and make nasty remarks about that, you know. We went to the Christian Japanese school, which was not as structured Japanese-wise. It was had a small sprinkling of the American God in there, you know, which was a little different, I think. And but not being able to compare it with being in Japan, I don't really know if that was so different, you know.
Well, if, for example, in the Japanese schools, was there any? Well, the Christian ones would be a little bit different, I'm sure. But this thing about the emperor, for example.
Oh yeah, you know, like our meetings last time you bought in the auditoriums, they would all start with the bonsais to begin with and end with the bonsais, mm-hmm. You know.
So you'd have a big portrait of the emperor.
Yeah, right. And, you know, somebody would stand up and say, Tendo Heikan, everybody go bonsai.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, oh, that happened during the war, after the war, too.
After the war.
Yeah. Yeah. But they would all get together. And the one mass meeting that we had, it was after the war, and people got up and talked, you know, what happened and what they're going to do and everything, and then they ended up with the bonsais at the end.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The Tendo Heikan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is in 45, 46?
Yeah, after Pearl Harbor. Way after Pearl Harbor, yeah.
This is where? How did everybody get together?
It was one of these community meetings, and they had it at the baseball diamond right next to the Christian school there.
Oh,
Christian
you're talking about 41, 40.
No, it was
after the war.
After World War, after Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And before we were evacuated.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. There were, I think, some isolated. There was a lot of talk. You know, the thing with, I think, that happened more on Turmel Island than anywhere else is a strong Issei influence. In Turmel Island, the Isseis had most of the say. I guess that was prevalent in all the Asian communities. And they made no bones about being on Japan's side, you know. I met some of them just recently and asked them what they thought about that, you know.
Yeah.
And they denied it.
Oh, yeah,
oh, this is the greatest country in the world. Like $123 out of Social Security. Nobody would do that for me. Super Americans now, you know, getting that bread. You know.
The same people?
Yeah.
Oh,
you
know. That's interesting.
But, you know, they used to lecture us, you know, about different things. And when a lot of us decided to go into service, boy, that must have been
really a real
brought it down.
Struggle.
Yeah. They used to come and talk to you in teams. You know, you think you got rid of one, there's another knock on the door, somebody else there. This was in camp. A lot of people, especially, you know, we had a small community to mouth. They were very
in Roar.
In Roar, yeah.
But I wonder if if you tried to do a statistical breakdown of Terminal Island young men, would you find a lot of people who went to Tule Lake or became Nono boys? Or would you think that would follow?
Gee, I don't really know. I don't know.
That wouldn't strike you as offhand?
No, I don't think that really happened that way. You know, I mean, so that I would know.